on Fridays at this time, we like to catch up with our good friend, Coach Al Brown, Hall of Famer and the Assistant Coach Hall of Fame, and he joins us as he served for both the Vols and the Lady Vols, as well as several other programs, head coach himself, but always fun. His appearance brought to you by Matlock Tire Service and Auto Repair. Coach, how are you?
I'm great, John, and I know you're super today and charged up, ready to go tonight. A huge evening in Tennessee athletics with the baseball team playing Arkansas, a game we're all looking forward to. And I know Jimmy is also hyped up about the golf tournament out at the Holston Hills. And it's just a great sports day for everybody here in East Tennessee. A big high school AAU tournament, basketball, men's, boys, or I should say, in Gatlinburg this weekend. All kinds of things going on in the sports world.
And, Coach, you, no doubt, have a great appreciation for and great experience with just watching how athletes benefit from, build on, and just put together their reels in terms of what they've encountered, what they've done to build on it, and how they can improve on their performance. But just in looking at Tennessee and Arkansas, and as opposed to Tennessee and Vanderbilt, it was number 3 Tennessee hosting number 2 Vanderbilt. It's the only series that the Vols have lost this season. What do you think it means to Tennessee going into this weekend that they had that experience against Vanderbilt where they had the spotlight, they went through all the buildup and the hype, but they also had time to digest exactly how that weekend played out before they got this other huge marquee matchup?
I think this team has been building momentum all year, John. You know better than anybody. They have had an up period, a down period, as all teams do. But right now they're riding the high. One of the things that will be interesting is to see how they handle a home situation with a crowd, with a sold-out crowd of enthusiastic Vol supporters. That sometimes is harder on the home team at times, but this team, as you suggest, with the Vanderbilt experience and with their experience all year, I think will be able to handle it and be able to win the series.
Al, Tennessee men's basketball team playing in that Hall of Fame tip-off tournament at the Mohegan up in Connecticut, North Carolina, Purdue, Villanova, Tennessee. That's a really strong field, isn't it?
It's a great field, Jimmy, and it looks like this year, unlike last, when the Volunteers didn't know if they were going to play Kansas, but they did, and they were going to play Gonzaga, and they couldn't. It looks like this year that those four teams will meet in the Mohican Sun in Connecticut, and they're all four teams are quality. I mean, all of them have players back. North Carolina's got 4 starters back. Purdue's got 3. Villanova has 3. Tennessee has 4 potential starters back. And they are ranked anywhere from the top 5 being Purdue. Depends on the ranking you're looking at. And the preseason poll, Villanova at 9 and Tennessee at 16 and North Carolina at 18. And all of them have veteran coaches, except for North Carolina. Hubert Davis is in his first year, but he'll have his North Carolina Tar Heels ready to go. So it's a great tip-off for the Tennessee Volunteers and a great way to open the season.
I love it as a fan because it's quality basketball. But from a coaching perspective, would you like it because it gives you a really good idea of where your team is and what you need to work on?
Well, no question about it. And I think this year, Jimmy, without not knowing for sure, but I think they'll have some exhibition opportunities, at least 2, before the season opens. And that will give you a chance to get a feel for your team. And then going against this field, it gives you an idea of where you stand at this point in time. Of course, it's a long season, but it's always good to know what your team looks like against some of the best teams in the country.
I saw where you've got, as far as Tennessee men in the NBA draft, your projection, Keon Johnson, number 6 to Minnesota, Jaden Springer, 18 to Houston, Eve Pons, 50 to Detroit. Is that your projection, or is that what you think the NBA folks will do?
Well, that was an NBA prediction, Jimmy. I couldn't take any credit or blame for that. And it may all these drafts are up in the air and all guesswork on everybody's part, because you don't know what's going to happen between now and when the draft occurs in terms of trades and everything else. But it looks like Johnson's going in the first round somewhere, Springer somewhere in the 15 to 20 range, and Pons probably 50 is not too much out of the line for him. Where they go, it's very difficult to assess at this time.
Coach, the transfer portal, no doubt about it, generates a lot of conversations as well as headlines, and we've seen it, of course, be overrun. And, Jimmy, if you would, what was the stat that one coach shared with you in terms of the number of players in the portal that haven't been taken? Or
30%. It was 30% of football players in the portal have not found a home.
And so, Al, you were highlighting what the traffic has been like, and no surprise at all, because basketball was already a transient sport before we had the wonderfulness that is the transfer portal. But what do you think? Do you think that there's more traffic in the transfer portal even nowadays, considering that it used to be on average every Division I program would have two players transfer out on the men's side? Is there more traffic, and is that number perhaps even greater on the men, with basketball, in terms of players in the portal that have not been, that have not found a home?
Well, I don't have a number on that, John, to accurately assess how many players are not selected or don't have a new home. It would be interesting to certainly see, just because they enter the portal, and I think sometimes young men and young women get the mistaken idea, well, I entered the portal, I can go someplace else. Well, that might not be that easy. You might not find a home other than where you are. It sometimes, in terms of the individual, scary, because they don't necessarily have to be picked up by anybody. And maybe they're not the coach that they left or the school that they left. They may not want them to return. So it's a roll of the dice for the young men and young women entering these transfer portals.
And it does seem to be a mixed bag, as you talked about the reaction of the school to the player that decides to put his or her name into the portal. Can you think, if you were an assistant or a head coach, what your reaction would be? Would you look at it perhaps as a case-by-case basis, or would you perhaps just do what you could to help that player find a new home, but they wouldn't be coming back to the program you were a part of?
John, that's what I would be doing. If you enter the portal, you obviously have some concerns about being in, I'll say, our program. So if you do have those concerns, I don't think that you need to come back. I will try to help you find a new home. I want you to have an opportunity to be the kind of player that you want to be, but it's obvious to me that you don't want to be a part of what we're doing here at whatever the name of the school is.
Our guest, Al Brown, his appearance brought to you by each week by our good friends at Matlock Tire Service and Auto Repair. And, Coach, that is that's a relationship that you've been proud to be a part of for years and years, isn't it?
Yes, it is, John. And, you know, we talk about statistics all the time. And here's some statistics on Matlock Tire. They have five members in their company that have been with them 40 years, 11 that have been with them 30 years, and 17 that have been with them more than 20 years. The consistency you look for in their coaching is also what you look for in business, and there's no question that Matlock Tire is a consistent performer and obviously treats their employees with great care.
Well, we sure do appreciate them and all they allow us to do. And, of course, they take great care of everybody that comes to one of their five locations.
Al, I was looking at your top five SEC players returning. Iverson Molinar from Mississippi State, who you like as the player of the year. Keontae Johnson of Florida, and hopefully he is back. Johnson Quinterly, Alabama. Darius Davis, LSU. Drew Smith, Missouri. Here's my question to you. John Fulkerson's not on it. How close was he to being among your top five returners?
Based on last year's performance, statistically, those were the top five that I thought deserved to be mentioned. Fulkerson didn't have a good year, and while he was a projected first-team SEC player last year, he didn't live up to that. Now, part of it was COVID, I guess, and part of it was just a very tough year for him. He may well be one of the top five players in the league before the season's over, but based on last year's numbers, he didn't measure up for me.
So if Tennessee is to have a top 20 team next year, do they need either Fulkerson or James or somebody else to be one of the five best players in the SEC?
Oh, well, that's a good question, Jimmy, and I think the answer is yes. And there are a lot of unanswered questions with Tennessee. Will Fulkerson return to the performance he had as a junior? Hopefully he will. James is a talent and probably can do a lot more and will do a lot more. Bailey, there's no question that he is a top flight player, as is Boscovi. And, of course, you've got the freshman coming in. Chandler may be the answer to first-team All-SEC as well.
Your top five women returner, number one, Ryan Howard at Kentucky. Number three, Ray Burrell at Tennessee. What do you like about Ray Burrell's game?
Jimmy, she's improved every year she's been here. And I'm looking for her to improve again this year. She had a terrific junior year. Numbers were outstanding. Now, the question will be, with Davis gone, it puts a lot of pressure on her to perform. Hopefully, the transfer they got from Troy, Dye, will make a difference there, as maybe Will Suarez. But if she gets some help, she's going to have and improves the way she has the last 3 years, she's going to have a breakout year without question.
Al, we've seen the first of the incoming class of very impressive Tennessee freshmen arrive in town, and I'm just wondering, the fact that last year there were so many unknowns, it was more of a not even a hurry up and wait situation, just a wait situation. For those that get the opportunity to get on campus, get settled, and start just getting used to being where they're going to go to school and who they're going to play for, what do you think that means in terms of trying to make the absolute most of that transition from high school athletics to college athletics when you have the chance to settle in and start to work with your strength and conditioning coach and so on?
Well, one of the things the NCAA did a few years ago was institute this summer program for freshmen that they could be scholarshiped and come on campus and be allowed to work out. So it's going to make a big difference, particularly when you have a large turnover of personnel, as do many of the SEC schools. So the summer will be critical to the development of the team and for Tennessee, as well as the other teams in the SEC that have a large number of incoming transfers and freshmen.
And I guess you also have to look at another faster the transition, because not only was there turnover on the roster, a lot of it, there was also significant turnover on the staff. And now, granted, they don't have to wait to get here. They're already been in town for a while and now and will soon be out recruiting for the University of Tennessee when we get to next month. But what do you think in terms of how does that work in the just developing that chemistry when you have two full-time assistants that join the staff as Rick Barnes has hired for this upcoming season?
Well, Schwartz being there will make a difference because there will be a connection with the players, and he will be a buffer for everybody. It takes some time to come together as a staff as well as a team. And this summer and fall will be very helpful in that regard. I mean, as veteran coaches, it makes it the transition a little smoother than the freshmen and transfers we talked about earlier. But there's still some adjustment to be made, and it will happen. They're all, Ganey and Clark are veterans, and so it will be, a seamless transition eventually.
Al, a couple of NBA questions. The last couple of years, Milwaukee Bucks have had a good enough regular season record, but they haven't been able to win the NBA title. You like them this year. What missing piece do they have now that they didn't have prior to?
Well, I don't know that it's any one piece, Jimmy, but they've got Giannis is one of the better players in the league. They have a veteran coach who knows how to prepare teams and how to win. They have good depth on the bench. And they've, other than a small injury here and there, they've been pretty healthy all year. So I just like them in the East because of the injuries other teams have had and the inconsistency that other teams have performed with. Even though Philadelphia's had a great year, so has Brooklyn, but they also have had injuries. So I like the Milwaukee from that standpoint.
Grant Williams, Tennessee two-time SEC Player of the Year, 60 games, 8 starts. He's averaging 18 minutes, 4 points, 3 rebounds with Boston. Will he stay with the Celtics at that production, or does he need to bring more?
Well, right now he probably needs to bring more for the Celtics to advance in the playoffs. But his defense has been, I think, better than most people suspected it would be. And that's been something that he's hanging his hat on. His overall numbers, 4 and 3 points and rebounds, are not significant enough to keep him on the floor at crunch time, but his defense has helped that. So anytime you can play 60 games in the NBA and get 8 starts, organization likes you, although they have made some comments that there's going to be some changes in the Boston organization. So we'll see what happens in the offseason.
And I want you to touch on Tamika Catching. She's being inducted into the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame. Al, I thought that in college, Samequa Hosklaw was the better college player than Catchings. Catching clearly the better WNBA player. Why do you think Catchings was better in the WNBA?
Well, Catchings was better in the WNBA because she got on the right team with a good coach, and they finally put the pieces together and won a championship. And Holzclaw didn't have that opportunity. And Holzclaw went through a lot of adjustment problems in the WNBA. When her grandmother passed away, that set her back mentally. It was a tough adjustment for her. She didn't get with the right team to perform up to the level of her ability, and it's unfortunate because she, as we all remember, was one of the most talented young women to come through the basketball program.
Coach, we always appreciate it. Thank you so much. And hope you enjoy the weekend, the end of the NBA regular season, and I know we all can't wait for the marvelous invention that is the play-in tournament next week, right?
That's right, John. Everybody's all excited about that, especially the players. And so it will be interesting to see how that plays out. I know the Lakers aren't very happy about it, so we'll see what that matchup with Golden State the Lakers have ought to be very interesting.
Well, Coach, again, thank you so much. Have a fantastic weekend, and we look forward to talking to you again next Friday.
Well, thanks a lot, John and Jimmy. And, John, you have a fantastic night tonight, and I'll enjoy listening to this Tennessee baseball victory.
Well, we sure do appreciate that. Thank you so much. And Coach's appearance brought to you each week by our good friends at Matlock Tire Service and Auto Repair. 5 locations to serve you, and Matlock Tire serving East Tennessee since 1953. This weekend, it starts tonight. It's Tennessee, the number 4 Volunteers, playing host to top-ranked Arkansas. And Vol for Life, Chris Burke, will be a part of the coverage for the SEC Network tomorrow when they square off starting at noon. But I had the chance earlier today to catch up with the VFL. Here's my conversation with Chris Burke. Chris, you're going to be on the call on Saturday. It seems like we were doing this just a month ago. How do you see the biggest regular season series ever at Lindsey Nelson Stadium starting tonight with Arkansas and Tennessee game 1, Vols number 4, Razorbacks number 1?
Well, I'm excited. I can hear the excitement in your voice. I wish I was there and doing the whole series, but you know, if I was handicapping the series, I would say there's a real good chance. You know, I would put Arkansas as the favorite in tonight's game. Just Patrick Wicklander has really, really been good of late. And, you know, with him being as dominant as he's been here recently and their offense, you know, being on par with Tennessee's, if they get off to an early lead, then they can play the league's most dangerous trump card, which is Kevin Copps. So, you know, if you look at Arkansas, obviously Arkansas's won every series. And I think I'm right in this, John. I think the only one they lost game 1 was Alabama. And I think that might have been Friday night has gone very well for Arkansas this year. And so I would give them an edge tonight. But I like Tennessee's chances on Saturday. You know, Will Heflin has been fantastic, very under the radar, but has been extremely consistent all year long. You know, if it's a scenario where Copps is in the game tonight, you know, maybe his availability isn't as strong tomorrow. And so I kind of see it setting up for a game 3 with a series victory on the line.
With the way that Tennessee and Arkansas have gone at it, I don't think there's any question that I think a lot of things point to that. But with the Volunteers, what do you think about them simply being in this position? Now, granted, it's because Vanderbilt and Alabama did not play the third game that there is a half-game difference in the Eastern Division right now. But still, no guarantee Vanderbilt wins that last one. No guarantee they don't. Right. But what is it like to see with 6 games to go in the regular season, Tennessee has the most wins of any team overall in the Southeastern Conference and as many conference wins as anybody else, being the Razorbacks?
Yeah, and as you and I are sitting here talking, they're listed on the potential host site for the NCAA tournament, and I think you and I both would agree that basically anything short of them probably finishing 0-6, they're going to be included in that top 16. And so what I'm excited about is, if you think about what's right in front of them, you've got, you know, arguably, but I think you can make a really good case, the biggest series in the history of that stadium. You've got full capacity for the first time all year. And let's be honest, John, as somebody that's called a lot of games in that stadium where it didn't matter what the capacity was, there's only been a quarter of it full. Like, you know, not only is there full capacity, but it's going to be beyond full, right?
Right.
And then you've got the SEC regular season championship on the line. And, John, you probably know this better than me. When was the last time Tennessee won the regular season championship?
Yeah, you'd have to go back. I mean, Tennessee, its last championship was 95. And then their second one ever was 94. So they've only won 3. And so it was 94. They were 24-5. And then they got it again in 95. So that's how long it's been.
That's right. That 94 team set the record for winning percentage wins in a conference season. Yeah. So it goes back to 94-95, which is by far and away the glory years of Tennessee baseball from a consistency and dominance standpoint. So, you know, you've got that on the line, and then you've got the opportunity, which seems to be a, you know, very high probability at this point, that you're going to position yourself to be hosting a regional and then potentially a super regional. So, you know, if things go well this weekend, John, literally just this weekend, you really put yourself in a position to win your fourth ever conference title. You position yourself to be a national top eight seed, which would then allow you, so long as you hold serve, to host a regional and a super regional. At that point, you will have three of the next five weekends, including this one, where you will be selling out game after game after game at Lindsey Nelson Stadium. And at that point, Tennessee baseball will, you know, have reached a point in time where it's only been rivaled probably at one other spot, and that was in that 94, 95, 96 era.
That's so true. And as you take a look at the two teams, Arkansas, of course, does a number of things awfully well. You mentioned two of the highlights as to who they have to operate and have done so well for them on the mound. They have a team that can mash. And Tennessee has come on, especially in the second half of the SEC schedule. But what do you think in terms, looking at hitters the way you do, that you see the combination of teams that have power but also have the discipline to really work over an opposing staff when it comes to drawing walks?
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm trying to remember Arkansas off the top of my head, but I know Tennessee does not walk many people in general. So that'll be interesting because you do have the threat of the home run. And let's be honest, John, it's funny. I'm doing a Zoom today with Dave Van Horn. Most people haven't looked at Tennessee baseball at this time of year under much of a microscope. But I think what people are going to come to find is Lindsey Nelson Stadium is very small. And now that they're going to be hosting a lot of warm weather games over the next 5 weeks, it's got a chance to be very offensive in the friendly confines of Lindsey Nelson Stadium. And Dave Van Horn was making that comment. He's like, Chris, I don't remember this place being that little. And I was like, well, they did the renovation. I don't remember what it was, John, about a decade or so ago. And they moved home plate out about 15, 20 feet. And, yeah, it is. It's a small park. It used to be a really big park, and now it's not. And so, but when it's cool and the wind is blowing from the north, it's a different environment. But when it's warm and the wind's blowing from the south, it can play really, really small. So with that being said, you've got two lineups that can hit the ball out of the ballpark really top to bottom. And so it becomes very scary for the opposing pitchers. And that's why I think, John, that's why I think Kevin Copps, he's a big factor all the time. But I think in an environment where the ball is going to be carrying very, very well, you got to like Arkansas's option to go to a guy who's a breaking ball pitcher and whose best pitch is breaking down and away from people's barrels, where if you look at Tennessee's best option out of the bullpen is Sean Hundley, and he relies mostly on fastballs, and he tends to have a lot of success with that fastball kind of up and away, which, again, I'm not saying he's not going to have success this weekend, but it scares you a little bit more than the Kevin Copps option, in my opinion.
And with Copps, Tony Vitello has spoken to this, that conversations with fellow head coaches that – you see more and more guys that are just so into, and perhaps I'm talking about players that are a bit paranoid that if they work once, they want a set time before they work again. And Copps is completely in 180 degrees from that. This is a guy who can go three, four, however many innings that he needs to get the job done for the Razorbacks. And then he'll tell you he's ready to go the next day. He really is somebody who just says, give me the ball, let's go.
Yeah, he's a workhorse. He's a walk-on. He's not worried about his draft status. And, again, that's no knock on these guys that are big-time prospects. I get it. But and because of that, Dave doesn't have to worry about that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like a Landon Sims at Mississippi State, you know, Chris Lemonis uses him once every weekend. That's it. They get their one shot, and then he's done. A guy like Copps, you have to – I mean, he threw in all three games in that Auburn series early in the season, and that's why I think he's going to be the pitcher of the year in the conference because of his appearances. And honestly, again, I'll bring him up. Sean Hundley is right there with Copps from an appearance standpoint. The effectiveness not quite as spectacular, but he's taken the ball as much as Kevin Copps has. So you got to give Hundley a bunch of credit as well because I don't know where Tennessee would be without Sean Hundley, just the same.
Very much so. And then when you get to a matchup like this where any number of things can decide just not just an inning but also a game and eventually the weekend, not often do you see that a team in Arkansas's position that they would be the number one team defensively. a lot of times if you've got strength on the mound, you've got strength in the batter's box, you kind of like, okay, we'll be fine when it comes to defense, but they're outstanding, aren't they?
Yeah, they really are. I mean, they are. Sometimes fielding percentage doesn't tell the whole story. You know, it's one thing to not make a lot of errors. It's another thing to have, you know, a truly difference-making defense. And Casey Opitz, their catcher, Robert Moore, and Jalen Battles, their middle infield, and Christian Franklin, their center fielder. That is as not only as reliable, but is also as athletic of a group as you will find in the middle of the field. And so Arkansas leads the conference in fielding percentage, but they also have a real playmaking defense as well. And Tennessee's defense has been very good, but I would give Arkansas the advantage defensively.
And so when it comes down to you being on the call, game two, I know you wish you could be on hand, but just how exciting is it to see Tennessee with this much on the line at this stage of the year? Because as we said earlier, it's been quite some time since that's been the case.
It's a blast, John, to see what's going on at Tennessee right now. It does my heart some good. Now, I gotta do my best to take my orange-colored goggles off and call the game. And you know I'm a baseball nerd, so I get fired up no matter who's playing for good plays. And I try to coach up the bad plays regardless of what the uniform is. But with this checkered kneeling that's going on, it's going to be some scene. And there'll be definitely, from my perspective, you know, there'll be a big smile on my face regardless of how the weekend goes down to just see how much college baseball – will matter this weekend and for the next 5 or 6 weeks to a university I love so much. I'm just extremely excited and grateful for the job that coaching staff has done to make this happen.
And then one last thing, Chris. I was last Friday years old when I finally put together that you and Tony were in the same class, that if Missouri had been a part of the SEC, you and he would have gone against one another in Eastern Division play your junior year. And so there's just something to be said about the middle infielder mentality, class of 01, 02, depending on how you want to look at it, and the impact they've had on Tennessee baseball. I think both of you,
well,
big thumbs up in that regard.
Well, I appreciate that, John. I really do, and I can't say enough of good things about the job that Coach Vitello's done. So hoping they keep it going. Just been a lot of fun to watch.
Comments from Vol for Life, Chris Burke, and he'll be part of the call for the SEC Network coverage tomorrow. We, of course, will have all three games for you. Tonight, the leadoff man comes your way at 6:15 with the first pitch at 6:30. Tomorrow morning, 11:45 a.m. with a noon start time. And then Sunday, the finale, which will be Senior Day. 8 seniors will be recognized before the start of Game 3 between Tennessee and Arkansas. That'll be a 1 o'clock first pitch with the leadoff man coming your way at 12:45. Jimmy Hyams is out at Holston Hills Country Club, Day 2 of the Visit Knoxville Open. And again, a reminder, we have Tennessee baseball coming your way on FM 99.1. The leadoff man comes your way at 6:15, and that's also the same time on AM 990. You'll be able to tune in for Brian Rice, who will have the call tonight as Lady Vol softball has made it to the semifinals of the SEC tournament by beating the co-champion and two-seed Arkansas yesterday 1-0. So it should be a 6:30 first pitch for Tennessee against Alabama. Alabama took 2 out of 3 against Tennessee. Lady Vols got the first one. Crimson Tide won the series when they met earlier this year. But it'll be number 3 Alabama in terms of seeding for the tournament against number 7 Tennessee. Brian Rice on the call starting at 6:15 on AM 990. We've got our number 3 of Sports Talk. We'll have more comments in regards to Tennessee and Arkansas here at Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and those will be from Vols head coach Tony Vitello. We'll also catch up with our good friend Steve Hamer as he'll join us for Hamer Time. All that next hour and more. Stay with us on 99.1 The Sports Animal.